Hi there. When I need to quench my desire for the paranormal, only one thing can hit the spot. I tune into Nightwatch with Todd Sheets. Accept no substitutes. When you need the real thing, tune in to Nightwatch, the only show that shudders and shakes and bumps in the night. And don't forget, Nightwatch is also available on iTunes for your portable paranormal pleasure. Nightwatch, paranormal radio for everyone. Why settle for less? Demand the best. Nightwatch.
Now in paperback, Jeffrey Knight's best-selling book, The Tooth Fairy is Real. Compelling information, says Jack B. Nimble of Humpty Dumpty Magazine. A must-own for any Tooth Fairy enthusiast. Patrick DeWorm, ABC Street. And Barney raves,
I love The Tooth Fairy.
The Tooth Fairy is Real by Jeffrey Knight. Not in stores.
Yeah. Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. We host classic B, horror, and sci-fi movies. All the good stuff we grew up with as a kid. And we show them every single month here in the Detroit area. But guess what, boys and girls? It's coming to you soon via the internet. To find out more, visit www.nightmarecinema.com. That's S-I-N-E-M-A. It's Wolfman Mac. Scare you later, babies. You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
This is so topical. Because you were right there for it.
Yeah, I thought. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh.
No, it's hilarious. Are you kidding me? This is great. So we're on break.
Yeah.
Doug and I shoot out to grab some drinks and stuff, and my adorable, cute little guinea pig named Wilbur, who I adopted a couple months ago, and saved him from a horrible gassing at the Humane Society. Yeah. That's what they love to do there, right? You know, he's just the most adorable little thing, and he eats, like, all the time, right? This thing, he's always whining and wanting to eat. So we're out there talking, and he's sitting there staring at us like, you know, no, now you can't come near my cage and not feed me, right? So, okay, little Wilbur, okay. And his favorite thing to eat in the world is a cucumber peel, like the skin. It's like his right. favorite thing in the world, right? So I have to buy, like, bulk cucumbers now, right? And I'm, like, force-feeding myself cucumbers because he only eats the peels, so I have to eat the rest of them, right, to justify the hundreds of dollars a week I spend on food for this thing. Just kidding. So I'm talking, like, yeah, he loves these peels, Doug. This is hilarious.
Yeah,
so check it
I
out.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw him eat one.
He goes nuts when he sees the peels. And he's sitting there squealing and stuff while I'm, like, you know, getting food ready. And I've been waiting for this to happen to me. I have, like, one of those peeler things, you know, like you peel carrots with or whatever, and it peels a cucumber real nice. And I've been waiting to do this, and I'm talking to you. I'm like, yeah, whack. I really take my damn index finger off of my left hand. I have a huge cut on my finger now from the sharp edge of that thing. And I'm like screaming my head off. You guys could have heard this.
Well, just so you know, God. Scott uses cartoon character Band-Aids.
Yeah,
so
I have. I don't know what this one is.
I have no idea.
No, this is. This one's called. I've had this box forever because Band-Aids last forever. You don't ever use them, right?
Right.
And this is the one. They're the gross cuts Band-Aids. The ones like they're translucent, right? And they have like even more worse cuts on them.
Oh, okay.
Than what you actually have. Like you could, if you actually had a cut like this, you'd be screaming in bloody pain.
Right. Or I'd be getting the salt. To
are
try
you?
And
yeah,
take, yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah, you'd be calling the hospital like a good friend would do, right?
Okay, or that.
Yeah, good,
or that.
Good idea there,
one of
Doug.
The other. Yeah.
Sorry, Thomas. I just thought it was topical because that's what pirates did to people.
They did. They cut them up. They cut them up. But they didn't skin them alive, but they did cut them up.
I hardly think they fed guinea pigs, but, you know.
They probably didn't have a pet guinea pig.
What's your website again, Thomas?
N-E-P-U-R-S, which is N-E-P-U-R-S.info.
If you haven't checked it out, you're an idiot. Check that out right now.
Yes, NEPURS.info.
Before we... Well, go ahead.
You know, that's the thing, is, Thomas, you...
God damn, this hurts.
You made for probably the fastest half hour, I think, in recent memory, because you sent a list and you said, oh, yes, and by the way, I wrote these couple of books, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, I latched right onto that. I was like, ooh,
pirates,
you got to tell me about
ships.
Pirates. Arr. And
I'm going to send you one, too. Your address. I'm going to send you guys one.
All right, yeah, great. Thank you.
Awesome. The other book that you wrote was Abandoned Villages and Ghost Towns of New England, which, of course, is, you know, obviously...
Well, abandoned ships. Abandoned
ships,
yeah.
Abandoned villages. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But before... So there are the two books. There's Pirate Ghosts and Phantom Ships.
Uh-huh.
And then there's Abandoned Villages and Ghost Towns of New England.
Yeah.
And of course, I latched on the pirate ghosts and phantom ships because, you know, the pirates and the ships. And I'm just like totally into it. And we were talking about a, you know, how phenomenal it must be and the amount of paranormal power. I know
the PP,
yeah. Yeah, wait till we talk about that in the fall.
Yeah.
the amount of power, whatever it would take to make a ship, like, disappear and reappear and et cetera, all this stuff, the ghost stuff. And then I said, well, there's the legend of a house that appears and disappears. And
mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Thomas knew immediately of you know,
a factory
that appears and disappears. Tell us about the factory.
Well, there was two of them. One was in Uxbridge, and it was the Crown and Eagle. And it would people. It was in the neighborhood, so you could see it from the houses. And it burned down, but people would see it as if it hadn't burned down. And sometimes they would see it on fire. It was rebuilt into condos a few years back, but the Shad Pond Factory one is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And people have witnessed this. This is off the side of a neighborhood, too. It was a big factory. People have witnessed this thing as if it was on fire again, like 1884, and they've actually seen people, most probably, running and jumping into the water.
Wow. Do we now, I don't know if you mentioned this or not yet, but what kind of factory was this again?
It was called the Shad Pond Factory, and it was a yarn factory.
Yarn.
We used to manufacture yarn and, you know, cotton, make cotton.
Yeah.
So, of course, there was plenty of material for a fire and probably opportunity.
Yeah, for the physical thing to happen, but I'm wondering why something, let's just assume for a second that this was, you know, the energy is what this is composed of, you know, like people instead. You know,
well, that could be an imprint in time kind of thing, though.
Well, yeah.
A residual type.
Still, in my opinion, I mean, that's a lot of energy, it seems like. You know, on a theoretical level, of course.
To recreate this thing.
Because people, we know. I mean, you hear stories a lot about, you know, people being seen, ghosts and things like that. But you don't hear too many stories about
entire buildings or factories.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, appearing and disappearing and reappearing,
complete with people jumping out of it to escape the fire into the river, into the water, or whatever. So, I mean, that's a pretty complete picture.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Thomas, what do you think may cause? I mean, it's a huge question, I know, and I'm not trying.
We're putting him on the spot.
Yeah, we're not doing
it. Give us the definitive answer.
But you know, I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Well, I think it's the economy.
I concur, sir.
I absolutely agree.
Well, some places get imprinted like that. I mean, this is a huge fire, and people probably did lose their lives. They certainly lost their livelihoods. And the energy could have imprinted itself like that as such,
mm-hmm.
where you will get a residual haunting. You know, once that energy happens again in that way, it triggers the image. Or it could also just be that place is a place that already held very high energy.
Well, did they ever look?
And is replaying it.
Okay. I'm wondering if there was any research, and I don't know if you know this or not. If you don't, it's totally cool. I'm wondering what the native stones and stuff like that were there as far as, like, the terrain, the terra.
Right. Is it silicone? Is it slate?
Yeah. I wonder if it had any type of...
Silicone?
Silicon.
Well,
evidently, I'm in a rut here tonight. Silicone.
Is that like, the Indians, you mean? The natives?
No,
Well, just the stones. I mean, what's the ground made of? The land.
You see, there's theories that certain kinds of rocks and minerals and crystals and things like that can hold energy or absorb or dispel energy. Like they talk about crystals being able to, if you carry a crystal around with you, it will have your energy in it.
Yep.
And then if you ever feel down or whatever, you hold your crystal and it can help balance you and focus you and things like that. So they also say that sand, for example, has a lot of silica in it, which is a crystalline structure. So they're talking about, you know, crystals. They're talking about how, you know, slate or granite or things like that. It's definitely different than, say, clay. You know, clay.
New England is loaded with quartz, granite. Loaded with it.
Hence all the stories that are out there, too. Probably. There's so many stories. I mean, aside from the ones we're talking about right now, that might explain, be a big factor, maybe. It's purely theoretical still.
You've got underground streams around here, and you got tons of quartz in them, and what does that make?
Yeah, there you go.
See, the water, you know, there's a lot of, you know, water theories and the quartz and the...
Yeah, the stones.
The stones.
It's like a battery.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so that may be one piece of the puzzle as to why a whole giant building would disappear and reappear like that, complete with, in a residual sense, complete with people running out of the building into the water, too. Completely fascinating. That just blows me away.
Yeah.
And it makes you think.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, totally. It makes you think, though, like, you know, how could... Again, I mean, like, I'm like... That's what has my mind working right now is that's a lot of energy in an area like that. for something like
but
that.
But it could be focused if, you know, if you're talking crystalline, crystal in the ground and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's supposed to focus energy, and if you get enough of it, just a little zap, boom, you could have a pirate ship or a whole building or whatever.
Let's talk about... Go ahead, Thomas.
Oh, well, one thing that happened that I used also as part of trying to figure this out is when we used to live in a certain place, it was thunder, lightning, rain, and everything all around us, but where we were, and because we lived in a certain pressure zone.
Ooh.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you know what?
I wish I had that here so that it would just thunder, lightning, and rain around.
What is that now, Thomas?
Oh, that's the mantle clock.
You have a most fascinating house.
I think you live in the Adams house.
I think you do.
Actually, this house is very, very haunted.
Really?
We've had our friends from the Ghost Hunters show in here already. We've had five or six other people in here.
Oh, my goodness.
I expect somebody to go, you rat.
Well, I was just going to say a couple things.
I'm teaching our beagle to do that now.
I was just going to say that, you know, you were talking about barometric pressure and stuff like that. We were last weekend we were at the Michigan Paranormal Expo, which we had here, obviously, in Howell, Michigan. And Patrick Burns was there, our buddy Patrick Burns from Ghost Hounds. And he was talking about barometric pressure and some of the work he's done with that, because with his software and stuff, where he's, measure barometric pressure while an incident was occurring, or what they, you know, where when someone was getting a sense of something, he would measure barometric. So you guys have done this also.
Interesting how timing came along with that, because you just talked to him about it, and now Thomas says it.
Yeah, so you guys have worked with that too, it sounds like, Thomas.
To a degree. I'm not a meteorologist, but one of the members of our group is.
Yeah, no, and that's cool. But, I mean, that just illustrates that that's just a great thing to see, because people are trying new things, though. And you just decide from going, oh, there's EMF and all this. You know, I mean, there's other things out there to look at. It's actually raining as we speak right now, too.
Oh, yeah,
it's
when I was doing the rang, I heard the...
Yeah, you looked at me and I'm like, it's thunder.
Yeah, it's just the thunder from outside.
It's raining right now, like, bad. We have thunderstorms coming through. But, no, that's...
We need one of those barometric pressure bubbles.
There's probably, like, something going on, like, in the living room right now, and we wouldn't even know about it here at the winery. But again,
I found this thing at a flea market. It's a thing that measures the haze in the air. It's a Radio Shack, a little, you know, science project toy. But it measures the haze in the air and all that kind of stuff, how much and humidity is in the air.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because we're experimenting taking pictures, and when this thing was measuring the higher IR levels and stuff, we were getting like little orbs all over the place in our cameras.
Oh. Interesting.
Which is naturally, you know, just the water. So when you look at this thing, the higher it measures, the more you're going to get these droplets you cannot see.
Hence the orb phenomenon. Another nail in its coffin there. Let's talk about, we got a few minutes. Go ahead.
What he wanted to talk about was vampires, but we didn't even
get
to
that. Yeah, we totally blew that thing away. Well, we got a couple minutes. Let's cover.
I feel
so
bad.
No, let's talk about it for a second, because there are a lot of legends in New England of vampires, too. We've heard lots of stories. You've had experience in this, obviously. Let's talk about this for a second. What's your experience with this? It's got to ask it. You know, I don't know.
They're in every city hall and every.
They're reelected.
Have you recently got a parking ticket or something, Thomas?
We have a very wonderful government here. We live in Putnam now. We have a very wonderful government here.
Excellent. Yeah, but, we'll be sure to tell them you said that.
We've gone and visited almost every single vampire grave in New England. And as a matter of fact, we'll be going to Vermont to visit a few others. And I, through research and heavy just traveling and looking through death records, I mean, hours of it, we found that a few were mistaken as names and everything. And it's because of shoddy record keeping back in the, 19th century.
Really?
Well, that I believe. I mean, everything was written down and it was interpreted. And there were not everybody was, you know, there was like public school system where you learn to read and write or get kicked out or whatever.
Right.
It was a specialized thing.
Someone would die and the doctor would say, okay, take this down. The next time I go to the city, I'll register it, you know. And 2 years later, he goes to the city.
Right.
Oh, God.
So, and the... Interesting.
Well, the vampire scare was actually consumption, but the New Englanders believed that, in Vermont, first of all, they believed that if a vine grew from one coffin to the next, when it reached the coffin of the last person who died, another family member would soon die.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness.
So what they would do is cut the vine, pull the last deceased out, burn all the innards.
Ooh.
And then somewhere it came along, if they fed those ashes to the afflicted ones, they'd get better.
Ew.
Okay, that's gross.
Come on.
Well, you know, those things will either kill you.
Well, they also used to throw leeches all over people. So they
cut them open left and right, too, to get the disease.
Yeah, that's true. But there's one thing, having a leech on your leg, and another thing, drinking someone's kidney and, lung dust.
Yeah, that's
true. If you mix it with a little bourbon, anybody will drink it, probably.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
I can imagine that.
Give it some class, some style, put it in a pretty glass.
It would be like Jack and Uncle Bob.
Yeah. Jack and Uncle Bob.
Jack Daniels
and Uncle Bob. Wow, look at you, man. Rim shot. Rim shot for Doug.
Actually, there was a case of vampirism in Chicago. They
really?
Jack that far.
Which one was that now? Because I've heard of a couple a couple stories.
I only heard of the cow that burned down Chicago. That's about it.
Which one are you talking about, Thomas?
I think it was Chicago. And it was sometime around the 19th century.
Uh huh.
And it was I can't remember exactly, but because I've been so busy with the New England ones. But it's very interesting that it's mentioned that there was one out the west too, and then in the Midwest. That is on record. These were all on record. What they believed was that actually the body wasn't leaving the coffin, the spirit was.
Oh, okay.
And the spirit would feed upon family members for fear of, if it fed on anyone else, it would get found out.
Okay. Oh,
and they never called it a vampire until the late 19th century.
What did they call it before?
Nothing. They never even had much of a word for it. Vampire came into...
Politician.
They call it the mayor.
They call it the mayor, yeah, okay. That was the name before vampire. Sorry.
they just didn't really have a word for it too much,
Oh, man.
They were afraid, I guess, maybe to call it anything. I don't know. But,
I know, I'm scared of it, because I don't want my... I want my deceased family, predecessors to... to
Chicago,
actually
Illinois,
rest in
1875,
peace.
Anonymous woman.
Anonymous woman.
Yeah.
No name for it at all.
Well, they didn't even give her a name.
Yeah,
they didn't give it a name, they didn't give her a name. They were just, totally uncreative.
Unfortunately, speaking of sucking, our time is completely sucked. Completely.
Okay, that totally was the best.
Speaking of sucking, welcome to Ghostly Talk.
Yeah.
No, unfortunately, we're out of time, Thomas. I mean, we covered a lot, but I think we'll have you back on again.
You have to. I have to say, because we didn't get to talk much about what we were going to talk about. Because I totally latched on, and this is so unlike me, let's latch on to the commercial part.
Well, Thomas, did you enjoy yourself, sir?
Oh, yes. This is awesome.
That's cool.
Right? Very much.
No problem.
Even though you had said, oh, by the way, I also wrote a couple of books. I want to throw the names of them out there.
Go right ahead.
Oh, by the way, Thomas D'Agostino wrote Pirate Ghosts and Phantom Ships.
Mm-hmm.
He also wrote Abandoned Villages and Ghost Towns of New England.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I have to say, if they are half as fascinating as this hour has been, they've got to be phenomenal.
Heck of a read.
And throw out your website.
What's your website again?
Time.
The website is NEPURS.info, New England Purrs.
Neepers.info.
NEPURS.info. And I'm sure there's going to be links. You said it's a brand new site, but I'm sure there'll be links to how to get the books and things like that and the different research. And you actually do investigations, too, which is what we were going to talk about as well, but we didn't get to.
Next time.
I latched onto those books, so I'm
sorry
about
that.
Thomas,
hang on the line. Hang on the line for 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Yes.
Coming up, guys, actually, the last half an hour of the show here.
Yes.
We are going to... I thought this would be kind of cool to do this. We're going to be letting you guys hear the panel discussion that I was a part of
At the Michigan Paranormal Expo last weekend, where it was myself, Patrick Burns, James Willis, our friend James Willis was there, to name a few people that were on this panel, and we didn't know what the subject was going to be, but then they came to us like 15 minutes beforehand and said, Frank's Box, we're going to be talking about. I'm like, whoa, okay, heavy, right? So basically, we did this panel discussion on this thing. I thought it was really cool. We recorded it, for Ghostly Talk here. And I thought it'd be cool for you guys to check out here on the show.
Ghostly Talk!
All right, folks, we are about ready for the panel discussion. If you'd like to find the seat. And for those involved in the panel discussion, we need you to come forward, if you would please, and grab a chair. How we're going to do this, just to give you an idea of what's going to happen, we have this august group that's going to be here tonight, and the discussion is on Frank's Box, or any kind of a derivation thereof. And the discussion is going to happen between them, but it's also going to answer your questions. So what we'll do is we'll start off with a couple of just general questions. We're going to have to pass the mic around so that we can make sure everybody can hear, and also that it gets broadcast on Parax Radio Network. So they'll be passing the microphone back and forth. I'll tell you something else we could do too, Tom, if you want, because, I'm sorry, it can't work that way. I was going to say, if this would come across the PA system, it'd be great, but it doesn't. So, what we'll do is have the discussion. If you have questions later on, that'd be great. Right after this, we'll be taking our dinner break, coming back right after that. Also, I think that they're going to have a tour during the dinner break as well. If those who didn't get a chance to go up to the Opera House before, they will be having another tour during the dinner break, if you'd like to take that. So with that, Tom. And briefly, we are going to literally pass the mic or pass the book. Each of you, just to give us a Reader's Digest version of who you are, who you're affiliated with, and right on down the line.
Chris Baker, Crossroads Paranormal Radio and Crossroads Paranormal.
James Willis, weird writer and director and founder of The Ghosts of Ohio.
Scotty Rourke, Madison researchers into the paranormal from Madison, Wisconsin, also with Spooks R Us on Parax Radio.
Lisa J. Smith on Psychic Radio, which is powered by CBS and heard on AOL, and I'm a psychic medium.
Scott Lambert of Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio at ghostlytalk.com. Don't cross the streams like that.
Patrick Burns from Ghost Towns Paranormal Investigators and Haunting Evidence on True TV.
Yay! Now we're going. The first question, Frank's Box or any derivative of it, fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction.
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 I'm going to be Bill Clinton and say both.
I'm going to be the naysayer and say fact.
Okay. Starting with Chris, now let y'all pass the mic down. What do you know about Frank's Box, or have you ever dealt with any type of box like that?
Actually, I have personally never seen Frank's Box in action. I have never used one. I've watched the YouTube videos. I think what has really turned me off of this is the use of it, people being charged. And there's so many different radio frequencies out there that you don't even know what you could be picking up. I was driving to work one day, and my radio station went out, and a voice said, "My name's John." So was a ghost coming through my radio? Don't think so.
I don't like the name Frank's Box because it makes me feel uncomfortable saying Frank's Box. Other than that, I guess, no comment. I guess the thing that makes me a bit of a naysayer is today, with today's technology, you have got so much stuff floating through the ozone. The fact that you're taking Frank's Box or the Radio Shack hacks, where you're kind of snipping the tuner and allowing it to randomly bounce around and it stops whenever it hears anything, there's no telling what you're actually picking up. So.
Yeah, I mean, to follow up on that, I agree with the same thing, but my biggest thing is I Love Lucy is still playing out there somewhere, and so we're catching reruns from I Love Lucy on this thing. So that's my only thing, is the fact that it's on an AM frequency, and and it comes through the static of the ink, so it could be picking up anything. Or it could be picking up a mic like we have for Parax Radio, and somebody outside doing it at the same time, being able to do that through. So without the controls like that, then it needs to be more scientific yet before that. I mean, once again, I could be proved wrong tomorrow with it, and Patrick's going to do it by the time I get down here, because he's had some good experiences with them. But until I have done it, once again, I'm a skeptic myself. That's what I say. So, Lisa?
Very interesting. Frank's Box, this is what I'm getting to tell you about Frank's Box. Fact.
Ooh, she changed us.
And a little bit of fiction. Because, see, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There is something to it. And this, I'm just telling you what I'm getting. There is something to it. But you are also picking up other sounds along with it. If there is a way to strip down, and I'm seeing an onion, to strip away all the other frequencies, noises, you would be able to get to the root. So the root is there, but it's how you get to it. So, yes, fact and fiction.
I'm going to go fact and fiction with explanation on this issue. I've got to see Frank's Box, a real one, in action with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I got to see it in West Virginia last year. It was really cool. Heard a couple interesting things. I've also got to see a couple of the Radio Shack hacks in action, too. And a couple of interesting things came through. But it has to be noted, too, that, yeah, there is the radio frequencies and the signals. I was talking with someone earlier about this, and I heard this being used, a Radio Shack hack being used one time, and somebody's like, well, what color's the sky? And then, they said blue. Did you hear blue? You know, and I'm, okay, and reach. There's an issue with that. I think putting this under the microscope and getting a lot further research, let's use a Faraday cage on this. I have not heard of a Faraday cage being used on a Frank's Box yet. And I'll keep this brief, Pat, I promise. Another thing we could do with these is experiments, maybe from a remote viewing standpoint, where we do take verifiable questions and blind participants with this thing and have them ask these questions and see what kind of results we get. I don't want to write it off and say fiction, complete fiction. Let's give it some more research. Let's see what we can learn from this thing. That's my 2 cents.
Well, there's one from the chat room. I'd like to go back to the other lady. What do you feel about people charging to use this device?
Yeah, I already touched on that. You know, personally, myself, I have never charged money to conduct a paranormal investigation. It's sort of frowned upon within our community to do so. And because of the fact that the Frank's Box is not giving verbose answers, okay, it's like EVP. It's in the ear of the beholder. A lot of people will hear it. A lot of people won't. You can't ever say for sure that you're actually getting a concise answer from the other side, okay, because some people are out there billing this device as the telephone to the dead. How do we know? That's presumptuous for us to say that. Yes, it appears that we're communicating with an intelligence out there, but it may not even be deceased relatives. You know, if you want to get out there and you want to get into some of the more bizarre theories on this, there's a theory that these might be interdimensional beings. These might be extraterrestrials, okay? You know, it sounds crazy, it sounds far-fetched, but so does, you know, saying that these are the voices of the dead that are coming through here on this device. So I have a problem with that. I don't think that, you know, I think it's great to help people with the device, but, you know, unless you can be giving them something that is really solid and everybody agrees on, that's kind of a gray area, and I won't be doing it.
Patrick's right. I know charging for anything, it seems, any kind of services in this field is frowned upon. I think when it comes to paranormal investigations, it goes a step further into that because a lot of times you're playing with people's emotions that way. You're taking advantage of their emotions through monetary terms, and I think it's a very sad thing that there are people out there still that do that. I know that attitude carries in the ghostly talk where we haven't charged a... We lost our butts on this show about 5-6 years ago, I think. We were totally in the red on that, but it's all free. It's the same attitude. I think that's what this field's about. There's nothing concise about this whatsoever. It's all theories. We all know that. So you can't give someone a solid answer as opposed to being like a financial consultant where there are numbers and ideas and things involved that will get results if you, you know, they pay you to consult with that. So I'll back up Patrick on that 100%, especially when it comes to Frank's box, because again, it's things that, you know, we don't know about yet. It needs more research. That's why I'm kind of, we're both kind of like, you know, both ways here. I want to see more research with it as opposed to just shutting it off going, this don't work, throw it away, we need to find something else that does work. I think it just needs more research on our own time and our own dime, not on somebody else's time and dime.
Well, I agree. I agree with that. And all I can say is being a psychic medium and working with Prism, I volunteer my time with them and, you know, volunteer my time being here today. And, you know, it in the paranormal community, that's what it is. And like you said, it's not scientific and it's giving theories. And, you know, I agree with that.
Well, my one concern about charging is the fact that when you charge somebody, somebody expects something back. And when you have a client or someone expecting something back from you, the chance of you trying to make something more of what you caught that evening is going to be higher. And that's where I think we get into a lot of trouble if we go into that road. So the fact that keeping it, you know, on our dime is so much better, because then anything we get will be real and not, what, fake? Forced, or, right?
Money becomes involved in the equation, there you might have you might feel compelled to give them something for their money.
Can I ask a question? That does raise an interesting point. Sorry. That does raise an interesting point, though, because we're talking about private investigations, right?
Yes.
There are ghost tours, right. I'm not pointing anybody. I'm not trying to shoot anybody down, but I've been on a lot of ghost tours in Gettysburg, you know, for example, and again, not pointing any fingers at anybody, but it's a ghost tour. You pay money for that tour, and I haven't seen a ghost.
Yeah, but on a ghost tour, then it's more of entertainment, because we pay to go to a ball game, to see a ball game. So we're going to go and talk about ghosts on a ghost tour, which is different. Right, I agree with you. There is a line, right? But when we're going to someone's house, you know, and we're charging them, then the onus is on us to give them something.
Okay.
Because what do we just charge for? How much do you get for walking in the house? How much do you get per hour? How much? What does that mean you do? You know, then you get into all that crazy stuff. You know, so
yeah, what they said.
Well, I know you have an opinion.
All right. Here we go. One of my biggest problems with charging for the use of Frank's box is when Frank first created the box back in 2002, it was not meant to be used to charge people money. That was not his intention when he created Frank's box. The other thing, if we're going to talk about radio broadcasting and investigations, one of the things we did when we started Crossroads Paranormal, and thank you, Ghostly Talk, for being basically the godfather of paranormal talk shows. But, yeah, give it up. But one of the things we did when we started Crossroads Paranormal and Crossroads Paranormal Radio is we consider it a public service. Yes, it is a service, but it's a service we provide to you, our communities, and trying to help you, empower you, and educate you. And if that's what Frank's Box is going to be a part of, and people are going to charge for it, it's not something you will ever see Crossroads Paranormal ever, ever use.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. Now, for the audience participation, does anybody have a question for any of these fine folks up here?
My question is, if you believe Frank's Box or any form of, is it ITC?
No.
Wait.
Oh, good. I mean, no.
If you believe any form of that is ever legitimate, what's the difference between that and channeling? In other words, if you're channeling through a human, is it the same stuff coming through electronics as it is through a human? What? Any ideas of what's going on there?
We start from this way back.
Well, if you have a human sensitive that is channeling, that's an entirely subjective experience, okay? There's no hard data, really, that's recorded there. you know, that's the primary difference. You have a device such as Frank's box or another piece of equipment for ITC. You're actually recording, these communications, whatever these signals are. My hero in the paranormal field is a gentleman by the name of Professor Dr. Hans Holzer, who has been at this forever. In fact, he is the one that coined the term ghost hunter back in the 1950s. Holzer thinks everything that I do with the electronics is complete nonsense. Okay? He thinks all the electronics used in paranormal investigation is worthless. And I understand his reasoning, his argument, and also the fact that he comes from a different era, a different time. They didn't have portable electronics back then. There was no such thing as a computer, a personal computer, let alone a portable laptop computer. The technologies that we have available when he was at the peak of his game, so to speak, was several decades away. So he comes from a different time. Holzer believes that the only piece of equipment, the only instrument you need on a paranormal investigation is a medium that can channel into what is called a trance session, a trance medium. This is essentially a medium that slips into a trance state, and they allow their body to, in a nutshell, become temporarily possessed by these spirits coming through. And if you've ever seen somebody do a trance medium session, it is bizarre. The voice changes and their personality changes. And they claim that they come out of it and they have no recollection whatsoever of what's going on. But he said you become the investigator at that point. You ask the spirit questions through the medium, and then you go out and you verify it. Did such a person exist? You take the medium into this location cold. So that's one way that you might actually be able to validate what is coming through, because, of course, a medium is able to answer more directly. If you're recording an EVP, you might catch a word or a phrase. If you're lucky, a whole sentence like, "Nice to meet you, Patrick." But then usually that's the end of it. So if you have a medium, you can actually carry on a two-way conversation and communicate with them.
I think that's a really cool question, because it raises another really cool question. Humankind and machines. How can a human channel these things or get these messages? How can a machine get these messages? Maybe by finding that one piece of glue between human and machine, that would answer the question of why we do get these things on voices and whatnot. I mean, I'm convinced, I know myself, that weird stuff does happen. We have aliens over there. We have ghost group over here. You know, and there's ancient mystery. There's all this weird stuff under the term paranormal, right? I'm convinced that a lot of it really does happen. What I'm more interested in now is how it's related, right? And there's a good example of that. How are the machines and, you know, the humans related? Now, some humans do act like machines, right? But, yeah, same here. But in terms of messages and receiving these messages, that's something to really think about. And that's like, you're going to have me like just like a hamster in one of those things for the rest of the night, probably thinking about that. That's what I would encourage people to think about, is just that, you know, humankind and machines and how they do receive these messages.
Interesting question, being a psychic medium, and I've done trance before, so this is interesting. And I actually did trance here the first time I came to the Opera House, up on the stage, and I sat down and I didn't know I was going to do trance. And I encourage you to go on the tour. It's very dusty and dirty up there, and I have my cute little white skirt on. And for some reason, I just sat down and plopped down and closed my eyes, and out came Maybelle. And there's pictures up there of, I guess, orbs that they took when I was in the trance, and I don't remember anything that I said. I have no idea. I do remember, because when you do trance, you leave your body and you just kind of stay there. I was sitting somewhere else. I don't even know. And she didn't like my body. She thought I was like too pudgy for her, and she didn't mind telling everybody that. And she was flirting with my husband, as it's, you know, and all this stuff. It was very interesting, things that I would normally not do. So when I, you know, but
flirt with your husband?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yes, good one. Very funny. But what I wanted to tell you is, I think it would be very interesting, and I think we talked about this last night, being able to go into trance and entrancing somebody and then being able to capture scientifically what's going on. Some things are just unexplainable, and if it's a frequency. So when I give you messages, even though I'm giving you messages, I'm raising my frequency. I don't necessarily even know how I do it. I just do it, and they lower their frequency, and then it comes out. I don't know if that helps to answer, but it's a frequency and it's a vibration. So that's maybe why sometimes you don't capture them. Let me tell you, whatever technology, and they're saying this right now, technology we have, it can't always explain the paranormal. There's not an explanation for everything. Some things just are, and it just is, and it comes from here and being able to connect with it that way. And that's what I'm getting to tell you.
I have nothing. I'm done. Except for my heroes are on stage here with me today. So I really don't. I mean, that's, you guys summed it. Next question. You guys got anything?
I got something.
All right.
For me, I'm very skeptical about a lot of things. But what intrigues me most is that with the case of Frank's box, you have a very cold, sterile piece of machinery. What I would like to do is get somebody who goes into a trance or something like that and put some EMFs around them, put some ambient temperature devices. You have a physical person, a living, breathing person that you can see. Are things changing around them? Are things changing on them? How are they emotionally and physically? So that's the part that is intriguing about Frank's box versus actual people.
Well, I just want to add, and I think Carla hit on it too, or Lisa, sorry, Carla, yeah, okay, we changed your name. Yeah, did you? People tend to forget that we deal with the paranormal. Paranormal means what? Beyond normal. It is unexplainable. So can we sit there and say, yes, the trance is the way to go, or yes, technology, Frank's box is the way to go? No, we can't. Because we can't explain how she does what she does. And we can't explain how Frank's box does what it does. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's paranormal. It's beyond normal.
And I can't explain what my brother does, but that's entirely different. That's abnormal. Any other questions?
Yes, my question is, when you're in a trance, what is it like? Like, are you actually living somebody else's life for that time being?
Usually at work.
Let's ask Scotty. Scotty, when you do trance, no, it's not like that. It's not living somebody else's life. Well, it's energy. Everything is energy. So I guess I step aside. I step out. I didn't even know I was going to do trance. It just happens, and your voice changes, your face changes, your mannerisms change. I was talking with Patrick earlier, and somebody came through. I mean, I wasn't in full trance, but you could definitely feel her mannerisms were coming through. And if I wanted to, I could have let her come in. I didn't want to. It's my choice. And I just, you know, it's half there and half not. But it's not living their life. They're coming through. So hard to explain. It's just energy. It's energy. It's not their life. It's their personality that they were when they were in the physical. We're not this. We are not our physical bodies. So when you trance somebody, you're bringing through their energy of what they were in the physical when they were here in that lifetime. That's all it is. But there's lots of lifetimes that maybe this Mabel, she hasn't always been Mabel. You know, maybe for whatever, but she's a ghost here of the Opera House, so that's who she is in this lifetime, and she's coming through in that lifetime. It's really hard to explain, and what it feels like, I just step aside and they just come in, and it doesn't feel like me. You know, I could do it, and then, you know, your whole body kind of changes, and then they just come out in their hands. You can feel them come in.
Is it kind of like a puppet? I mean, seriously.
Well, not quite. You always have control. Always have control. Puppets don't have control because you're on somebody else's string.
Pinocchio did.
Okay, anyway. When you're in trance, you don't remember anything because it's not you. So I step out. Like I was, if you look at the stage, to the left of the stage, I wasn't even in my body. So I don't know where I go. I just will go sit over there. and just let them go, and I don't remember anything. When I give you messages, I'm channeling, trancing in a way. I don't know what I say to you. I don't remember, you know, so.
Yeah, no, we're going to go that way. Any other questions?
I just wanted to ask you guys down the row here, what initialized or got you interested from the get-go to go into this sort of field? Was there any one experience that pushed you into it, or if you have any experiences like that?
We'll start back this way.
I actually talked about my personal experience during my presentation, but to kind of elaborate on that, the first movie I ever remember seeing was Stephen King's Carrie. The first book report I remember writing was when Stephen King wrote as Richard Bachman and wrote the book Thinner. So it's been a lifelong interest, and I guess that's about it for me. I'm just paranormal.
I was born and raised in upstate New York, right next to the place called Tarrytown, which is the real Sleepy Hollow. Washington Irving kind of borrowed what he saw and used that in his book. So growing up, that was the big class trip, is to go out and retrace the steps of the Headless Horseman. And then, believe it or not, my first investigation that I ever did, my dad had to drive me to. I was 8 years old, and I actually debunked the legend of Jessica Graham's grave roaming around the cemetery. I saw a news article and went out there and was kind of debunking it while my dad sat in the car chain-smoking. So I, you know, thanks, Dad. You know, he was just like, go ahead. So I guess he endorsed the fact that I was a bit strange and running around and into cemetery.
Well, I started when I was a kid, too. I actually saw white people come down the hallway when I slept at night and come into my room. And I called them bakers because they were white. I don't know, I like food, as you can tell, so, right? But bakers, that's what I call them. They were the bakers. They always came down the room. But it wasn't until college when I had my first two experiences that got me into this. I worked at an opera house, too, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I was in a theater on the campus at the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh. And at the campus there, I saw a full-body apparition of a lady when I was upstairs going in the prop room during the day. I screamed and ran out, and everyone thought I was a girl, and I'm like screaming, running down the hallway. I was freaked beyond compare. But that's what started me into it. And then when I worked at the Opera House, we had it was early 90s, and we had a ghost. Back then they called them Ghostbusters, because that's my favorite movie of all time, by the way. Because it made me know that I'm not crazy, because other people thought about it too. So, but when I was at the theater, they rented the theater out like this, and the guys came in to do an investigation overnight. They had this big camcorder, which was probably about this big, like that. They put on a tripod, and then they had a bunch of flour that they threw on the floor to see if the ghost would walk across it. And they put string on the doors, and they had pendulums, you know, to see if anybody was moving. I mean, it was really weird. Not like anything that we do is not weird, but I guess. But anyway, so all night long, so I let them finally do it because I was a tech director. So I went upstairs and I started reading the paper, and I hear these footsteps behind me. I turn around, and no one was there. So then I go upstairs to have lunch. I'm sitting upstairs at lunch, and I hear footsteps behind me. Turn around, no one was there. One more time, I went up to the booth up top because I had to get some stuff that I was doing, and I heard the footsteps, and I finally turned around and I said, if you're going to follow me all night, stop scaring me. And then I stopped hearing the footsteps the rest of the night. But I knew they were following me because he knew me, or her, and you know, whatever the ghost was, knew me. So they were following me around, not letting the ghost hunters find them. So, but that's how I got into it. That's how I started.
How I got into doing what I do, and people ask me a lot of time, when I was little, like 4 or 5 years old, I always knew, and I don't know how I knew this, that there was something so much more than what I was seeing. And people talk about hell, or they talk about heaven, and they talk about this, and they talk about this, and religion, and all these things. And I, as a little kid, I couldn't make sense of it because I saw everything as one. I saw us all connected. And I didn't understand the division of everything. And I thought, where is there really a separate place where, I don't know how a little kid knows about war and this and that, and how that could be here. And I just knew it was different, and I always knew I was different, but I never knew how I was different. And as I grew up, and I have experience of like feeling my grandfather and nobody validated it for me, or feeling my grandmother, nobody validated it for me. And then in my early 20s, my best friend passed away, and she just came through, and it just boom, 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 and I started knowing everything again all the time, everywhere I went, and now it's not like that. Like, I don't look at all of you, and I get things on each one of you. I don't read minds. I'm not telepathic. And I'm a really normal person, and if I'm just talking to you, I'm just enjoying talking to you, and I'm not getting anything psychic, and I don't want to. I just want to enjoy you for being who you are in this moment. But it's as far as the paranormal, I got into it with Prism. Prism found me, and have just done a little bit of research with them, and have done some things here with them, and I just find it just so fascinating. And you said something that I find interesting, how you debunk, and the skeptics, and I'm so glad that you do, because there's so many good people, and there's so many more bad ones. And it's so important for what you do to be able to show people and be able to to reveal what isn't true. Because, when you're dealing with people's hearts and you're dealing with them at vulnerable times, and then you go to somebody who's like, well, you don't want that. And you have to make sure, too, to use discernment and listen to yourself to work in the highest and best. And it's good that you guys do this and that you do it. Not everything you're going to do is going to be able to be scientifically proven. And spirit laughs, because it's not about being proven. It's about finding the faith in your heart and believing and knowing and feeling your connection to the divine. So not everything is going to be scientific. And I laugh because I think, oh, we're spinning our wheels. And it's like fun for us to just do this, to go on ghost hunts. But on the other hand, it's so cool to get an EVP. So I'm right there in the middle, and that's how I do it. Oh, wait, one more thing. If I were to hear the EVPs, like I don't hear, I was doing something downstairs and I went to touch the wall a couple summers ago, and I went to put my hands up there. I'm like, all I knew was I didn't want to touch the wall, but I knew I had to, and my guides, and I'm like, okay, and I did the light and the Reiki, and then they sent me an EVP, and they captured when I went to touch the wall, and it said, don't do it. If I would have heard that, I would have been running down 96 so fast. So I don't get it like you hear the EVP. So what you get is so cool.
Black Sabbath got me into the paranormal.
Yeah.
Have you heard those albums? Yeah. Humans didn't write that music.
I am Iron Man. Down, down.
Ghostly Talk.
You have been listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio. The Ghostly Talk audio program is distributed for free under the Open Content License. Please share with all your friends and support independent media.